Hello people, how you doing? Welcome back to a new season of Three in a Row. We missed you guys, hope you missed us as well. Boys, check in. First of all, actually, we have a special guest in the building today to kick us off. A returning guest, Christian Azuma. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing all right, man. Nice to be back on the pod. It's been a while, and I hope you guys are all doing well as well. If I too, I'm going to pass it to you.
It's been a great time.
I mean, you know, I think United's results have caught his tongue a bit. But, you know, let's just assume Ifatu is not good. I, on the other hand, I'm doing fantastic. Jesus, however you want to pronounce the name, is leading us now the right way. And, you know, United dropping points, Liverpool dropping points, Spurs dropping points, Chelsea dropping points. It was a good weekend for, you know, the best team in London.
Word. But let's get right into it, I guess. Before we jump into the weekend, should we take count of how we are feeling going into the season? Seeing as, I guess, the last time we were on the pod, we were rounding up last season. And giving our ratings for that. Damola, you were just talking about Arsenal. How are you feeling going into the season? It's sounding optimistic.
I am, for the first time in a while, I am almost 100% pleased with Arsenal's transfer business. It addressed the glaring errors and put reinforcements in key places. And despite me fighting Arteta and having different gripes with the man, I believe he actually has players that are set to what he wants, which I think can only work to his advantage since he doesn't need to kind of like work with his already there. And it's not just the coming in. So I think Jesus has been big for us now. But also like the targeted loaning out. I like the way Tavares is at Marseille. And it seems like we're kind of like getting rid of some of the dead weight on the team. So yeah, I'm optimistic. Target is top four, top three, or nothing.
Target is the league.
Yeah, I'm not there yet because City is still a bad boy. But, you know, top three, top four, I think, is a realistic target for us this season.
Yeah, I feel you, man. It's the first time in a while that Arsenal fans have actually had some hope going into the season. And I think everybody is silently confident slash prayerful on what the boys can do. Shasha, you know, at some point in the season, the wheels will fall off. So we should kind of just prepare ourselves for that.
Let me step in and play devil's advocate a little bit. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Obviously, I think we've done so well in the summer transfer window as well. But I just want to point out that we don't have backup for Gabriel. I feel like people are not talking about that.
The center back.
Yes, the center back.
I know we have cover now. But Saliba or Ben White will shift.
Don't forget that those guys are both right footed.
Holding.
Holding is right footed as well.
Okay, you know, so
it's something that I would like. It's something that I mean, so far so good. Everything has gone well. You know, we've gotten our targets, but I just would like to hear something. I don't know, man. I think that left-footed centre-back is a key part to the way we play. And I don't like the fact that Gabriel is the only quality option, you know, because once he's gone, it's a step down.
That's a very good idea.
That's fair. I get that. But I do think we have quality. Like, I'll put it this way. I'm comfortable if it's Ben White and Saliba there.
Yeah.
If for some reason Gabriel is not there. If one of the three of them, Gabriel, Ben White, Saliba is available, I'm fine with it.
Should be all right. Well,
so yeah. Against most opposition, obviously against the bigger boys, that's a bit tricky, but against most opposition, I'm fine with that.
Against the bigger boys, you want the bigger boys.
That's true. Tomiyasu can actually play there as well, can't he?
Exactly. But he's right footed as well.
That's true.
That doesn't solve your problem. But yeah, I mean, Arsenal needs one more player, Sha, in the midfield or on the wing, as in an inside forward, one of those two. and then we can gear up for a good season. And I'm going to get everyone's predictions, but I want to actually, before we start talking about United, the damned United, have you guys watched the documentary? And are you guys finally Arteta fans now? This is the Amazon All or Nothing.
Okay. So, as an Arsenal fan, I'll say this. This is strategic Arsenal PR push. Like, the only thing I've learned from this documentary is Arsenal wants us to view Aubameyang as the bad person in whatever went on. And we have a young squad.
I don't think they villainized Aubameyang, though. They did not villainize Aubameyang.
They did.
So
they,
I don't think
they didn't.
How was he villainized? At what point did they say Aubameyang is the bad guy? They just said, we don't want him. That's all.
After watching the documentary, I will say something I was hoping to see was from a like tactic standpoint. Like, okay, I get to understand. Yeah, but not like deep tactics, just like surface level. The same way, like,
they showed a lot of Arteta.
I mean, they showed Arteta enjoying.
Yeah, all the positioning stuff that they were doing, all the talks that he's been giving in the room.
Nah,
so I feel quite secure about the tactics, like, based on this documentary.
So I'll put it this way. Like, when I watched the City one, I could almost grasp Guardiola's tactical idea, right? Then I could see what he was trying to communicate to the players and how to approach that on the pitch. But, like, obviously, without showing, like, you know, you can't show all the tactics. You have to show very high-level stuff because you don't want to give your opponents expo. With Arteta, this has felt more of a PR push. Like, you have very few characters in the team I can say I properly understand, except, weirdly enough, Granit Xhaka. Granit Xhaka is one of those people I think came out from the... And we still have a couple of episodes left, so we'll see how that goes. But Xhaka and maybe Ramsdale, because we had a
Martinelli.
Bit of... In the first two, I also got Martinelli as much.
Hardworking, 100%, Mr. 100%.
I feel like even that young coach, Carlos Cuesta as well.
Yeah.
The thing about
the all or nothing for me is that, like, I'm not surprised that it was a PR push. Like, Arsenal were never going to do anything that wouldn't make themselves look good. And if anything, like, if you notice, ever since Arteta came in, he's been trying to, like, set the agenda in a way. So, like, I think this was, like, the best opportunity for him to, like, do it some more. And I think he's been quite successful at that because, you know, you go on some of the forums on Reddit, Twitter, and people are beginning to, like, buy into the whole thing simply because of the all or nothing. So I think they achieved their aim.
Super Mick.
Because in the end, when you think about it, yeah, I feel like in football, in football, in Prem, agendas and, like, you know, like, the narrative is very important. It's almost as important
it's a big
as
deal,
quality.
Man. The story, exactly. Yeah. Like, it helps you build momentum.
Yep. So, like, I'm actually glad they took that opportunity to, you know, like, bring back the feel good factor as well, because it has contributed to that.
Apart, the Emirates obviously was rocking on Saturday. Wish I was there.
I don't know. You know, I don't know if you remember from the last time I was on the pod, when I think at that point Ole was still in charge of United.
Yeah.
And I like where this I'm is pretty going. Sure. I'm pretty sure I made a very outlandish claim on what Arteta was going to achieve. So I would like to say that I'm quite happy, and I feel very vindicated that he has actually, you know, managed to make the progress that I thought he was going to make.
Thank
with the
you,
squad.
Christian. If I too thought we were crazy in that episode, but I think it's a case of, let's take it one game at a time. Like, the pitfalls will come.
Yeah.
Right now it's really good
for sure.
An Arsenal fan, but we're obviously not there yet. But yeah, as I was saying. Sad I missed the Arsenal game, but I managed to catch a doozy this weekend. I was at the Brentford Stadium, and the scenes were unreal. 45 minutes in. Ifatu, how are you feeling as a United fan going into the season? Two games in, zero goals. You managed to score one, maybe? One goal and, like, yeah, six conceded. Is it seven?
What were you doing at the Brentford Stadium?
I went to go and watch Brentford and United. Now, Brentford is my local team. So, actually, I was taking my good friend, Tenny, who's a United fan. I promised I'll take her to a game that United is losing, genuinely. So, I chose this one. And, of course, based on the performance of last season, I went to Brentford a lot last season. I saw them. I saw United at Brentford last season, and Brentford should have beat you guys. Brentford should have had 4 goals in the first half. And it was crazy to see one season later, they took their chances this time and gave United no chance.
Yeah. Is Toppe not allowed to attend any game he wants to attend?
Trust.
Man, yeah, I mean, I think I decided to start the season with like as little expectation as possible. But still, you're never quite like not surprised, you know. I don't know if anybody expected. I mean, we knew United were bad. We knew that the manager wasn't like backed in terms of like his first choice signings. But we did not expect Manchester United to lose to Brighton and then to Brentford when they needed to, you know, make a statement. You know, this is a new manager at the beginning of the season. I'm still trying to like neutralize my own expectations and not like be too, you know, I don't know, be too decisive just based off these first two games. So I'm still, I'm keeping a low profile, hoping that my club will see out this period. I don't know. It's still early days for the new manager.
Yeah, so I will agree with you on this. It's still very early days, you know. I'm sure Toppe is about to reference something along the lines Arteta lost his first three games.
No, but I'm not about to reference that. Please don't put them in the same box.
No, I think it's a good thing that you're not being reactionary, actually. But
yeah,
thing.
No, that's good. But what I will say is...
Can a Man U fan afford to be reactionary, though? They really can't, because it's clearly... They've had 1, 2, 3, 4 managers, all with the same issues. The only thing that hasn't changed is the players.
Even the players have changed a bit.
The profile of player that they're bringing into the club is still the same. And they've gone to go and add Adrian Rabiot. Like, that's supposed to make a difference to this.
Let me put it this way. I think for me, though, that's kind of like what I was about to say is my biggest concern about United right now. Is that the problems that were there last season are the problems that are still there this season. And the transfer or the recruitment process has not been tweaked to address those problems. We all agree you cannot have Scott McTominay, British passion energy, as your number six with McFred beside him. Yet... it appears that is what United is going to have going into the season.
Ten Hag is using Fred as the
brother. It's baffling.
Bruno. That's the game he's trying.
Ericsson
gets the ball as a six. Huh?
McTominay is still in the team. He's still starting games.
I mean, he's not in the starting lineup is all I was saying.
Basically. Again,
he wasn't in the last one. Starting lineup, okay, that's true. ETA doesn't actually know his best team yet because he's already changed it, and it's probably going to change it again.
Yeah, which is fair, but like what Ivato was probably about to say, right? It's more along the lines like this chaotic midfield, which has been the problem for a while. You still haven't fixed it. Your priority transfers have not been to fix it, and they're trying to add Rabiot to it.
They tried for the young really hard, but.
We're still trying but
I saw exciting link today actually for United. Cunha.
I was gonna just bring that up, but then the amount seems crazy signing. As well, man,
that's a good sign.
Is it you think so?
I think so.
I'm gonna be honest, I've heard his name like once before or twice maybe max, and when I saw the link, I went to go check. Obviously, you know, the first thing you do is go check who scored now, see what his goal scoring record is like. And it doesn't seem like a 50 million euro striker to me at all.
I don't think he's a 50 million euro striker. I didn't know that was the price. But
that was the price.
Before he went to Atletico, he was at Mönchengladbach or somewhere in the Bundesliga.
He was at Hertha Berlin.
And he did really well. I remember being excited by him as a player then. I don't think he had the greatest of seasons last season at Atletico, but none of their attacking players really did.
You know,
better than Arnautovic.
Yeah, better than Arnautovic. You know, the problem that I see with United, I feel like right now you can add that guy to the squad and he's not going to, like, you know, his presence is not going to turn things around. I mean, look at what's happening with Lisandro Martinez, who was is a good player. But like you're putting you're adding to the mess.
So right I get now. What you're saying on Lisandro Martinez, but in fairness, I think that one was more naivety on Ten Hag's part than it says more about him as a player, right? So it's the same thing that happened to Ben White in the game against Brentford, that first game last season. It was a thing going into the game that Ben White struggles aerially. Lisandro Martinez is not the tallest center back in the world, right? In that type of thing, you put a structure around players with such a glaring, you could say, weakness.
Maguire is the structure now.
Exactly. But that's the problem. Maguire is also a liability. So, and it's the same, right? Because that's what Brentford did. They are very good at, like, okay, what is the most glaring weakness on the team? We're going to target that. That last season, first game against Arsenal, they did that. They're like, okay, we know Ben White struggles aerially. And that's what they did. They put Ivan Toney, and I can't remember who the other striker was there, to just cause havoc on Ben White's head.
In this game, they didn't even really... It's not like
they
targeted Martinez. They pressed. That's what they did. They pressed. Well, yeah, and United couldn't beat the press at all.
Exactly. But again, back to the thing about glaring weaknesses.
But Martinez was forced to pass out of the back.
Well, in this game, the glaring weakness was not necessarily Martinez's playing out of the back. It was David De Gea's playing out of the back. Those two goals, and first two goals were on De Gea. Yeah. So the first two goals were on De Gea.
Yeah.
The third goal was that outrageous counter-attack, yeah? And that one...
I don't even know, sexy. You're just thinking, if this guy could make this pass. And then
and he did.
That was the fourth goal. That was the fourth goal.
Oh, yeah,
that
sorry. The third goal was a corner.
Shout out to Mbeumo. He's my sponsor.
Shout out to Mbeumo. Three in a row loves you. The third goal was a corner. That's true. But again, that was one of those... That corner was just so scrappy. Like it was messy. Then the last goal was then that counter. But again, those first two mistakes played on one of United's obvious weaknesses, which is De Gea's inability to play out of the back. Unfortunately, that's something Ten Hag wants to do, and he needs to start examining. And he'll possibly need to make hard choices along the lines of: do I replace De Gea, or is this something I can work with him on? Because his center backs. The center back in front of him, which he somehow has still kept as the captain, Maguire, is not good enough to cover those mistakes. So,
yeah, I mean, I just want to. Sorry, go on.
No, what I was going to say was that. So, do you guys think that if they add Matheus Cunha, or even if they get Frankie, you think like things change really quickly for them?
I mean, I want to leave the final word with like Ifatu here, to be fair.
Yeah.
Just to get your hopes for the season, really, because if I was a United player right now, I'll be super depressed. Like, and it will be genuinely really difficult to pick yourself back up again. And play Liverpool next week. Another L. What's that? Although Liverpool are moving, Shai, we'll get to them. We don't really know. But yeah, thoughts, Ifatu.
The realistic answer to Christian's question about if United get the signings they want, if things are just going to change, realistically, the answer is no. But as a fan, sentimentally, I hope so. I pray so. I hope the manager is going to do magic somehow and somehow just change the way things are done at the club, you know, to the best extent that he can. But for now, I'm just trying to keep my expectations low and just watch from afar, from a distance. I'm on loan to Tottenham, guys. I'm on loan to Tottenham. Yes. I'm still a Man United fan, but like I will be supporting Tottenham because I don't think there's anything to brag about with United these days.
Speaking of Tottenham, the haram that went on at Chelsea Stadium was crazy. So,
can I just say,
don't you guys think Chelsea were robbed?
No, can I just say, off the bat from that game, Chelsea, like, I feel like a lot of people have written Chelsea off for the season. but clearly, like,
yeah, no, Chelsea is a problem.
They're so solid.
Chelsea is a problem. I truly think Chelsea should have won that game and got done in by two terrible calls. Terrible. In fact, let's excuse the first one somehow, because you could say Tyler.
A lot of time elapsed. Yeah, well.
Anthony Taylor. You could say he had a bad view of the initial tackle, and then the goal came from a second phase of play in which Jorginho made a stupid mistake. You could excuse that first one almost. The second one, on the other hand, Anthony Taylor had a better view of that hair pulling than we did as fans watching the game. Because when it first happened, I didn't even see what happened. It was when they showed the replay, I was like, wait, time out. Anthony Taylor is right there. And you could hear, you could see VAR telling him something. And it's almost like he told VAR to piss off. So I don't know how to explain that. Because this is something I'm going to highlight a lot this season, which is Premier League refereeing being terrible. Because they have the tools. It's not as if VAR didn't catch it. But for some reason, nobody decided that was a foul, which is just the fault of everybody involved in the refereeing of that game. And yeah, it's unfortunately cost Chelsea 2 points, in my opinion. Now, that's great for Arsenal. You know, I want all of everybody else losing. But that's like, it was appalling refereeing from
the game. You know what, I completely agree with you. I also thought it was ridiculous. But funny enough, I was having a conversation with some friends today, and they made the point that Zola made this point as well on TV, that apparently that foul has never been given. Marouane Fellaini, even Zola himself, he said when he was playing, like, he never got a foul for a head tug. And
that's
people were basically making a distinction that if it was actually his shirt that was pulled, then they would have given it. But honestly, when I saw the foul, like, it's still ridiculous because you're pulling my hair. Like, how am I supposed to do my job, you know? Like, I don't understand it either, to be very honest.
I get it, because I could have sworn something also happened to Guendouzi. I remember when the new one happened, and this person made that comment about sex machismo. What's his name? Van Gaal. And I was laughing so much when he made that comment. But it's happened two other times now. And for some reason, Prem referees do not use common sense to be like, this is something that needs to be called.
That's a really interesting point. Well, let's zoom out a bit, guys. Let's think bigger picture. Tottenham, let's start with the guys that, in my mind, Tottenham lost this match. Although I guess they won because they won the points. But early on, I thought they had like the best transfer window. These guys are not here to fuck about, blah, blah, blah. But they were still dominated by Chelsea. Is that just Conte's game and them doing exactly what they were always going to do? Or does that mean they could be got at this season? Like, where do you guys, or maybe this is a perfect segue into like top four predictions. You know, we always have to like table it for the records.
So I do think Chelsea dominated the game, but Conte still found a way to squeeze out a win, which...
With the help of the referees, by the way.
Yeah, they were helped by the referees, but like in certain key moments, it's like that corner, Perisic, man. I could have sworn Perisic is right-footed, but he took that corner with his left foot, which to me was just like outstanding. But Conte is a serial winner, and he's recruited serial winners into his team this summer. He's
done some good business. Richarlison, Bissouma, which serial? Only Longley.
I was
like, I'm no longer afraid of these signings. They're not that mad. That's what.
I think you're underestimating Chelsea, man. Because I feel like what that match showed us as well was that, as we both said, Chelsea are going to be very solid, and Tuchel still has his tactics on point. Their only issue is going to be a lack of a striker this season. So I think, like, I pray
they don't get Aubameyang, because if they do, I think it's harder for us not to be top four, to be honest.
But yeah, Christian.
For some reason, man, I'm not that worried about Aubameyang. I'm actually glad that we managed to sign Jesus instead of them, because if you remember, they tried to wiggle their way into that one as well, you know? And if they got Jesus, if Chelsea had signed Jesus instead of us... Yeah, it would have been over for most of us.
Yeah, if you guys had dragged that historic transfer, I'm pretty sure Chelsea would have been in it with you guys.
Would have.
So, you know, that's an advantage of wrapping up your transfer business early.
Yeah. Boli has been moving brazy in this window, to be fair.
Yeah.
And they are trying to bid. Did you guys hear about the bid for Anthony Gordon?
Yeah, I rejected 40 mil. I saw that one.
Yeah.
I didn't but get see, that that's one.
The thing. I don't get that one, too. Is Anthony Gordon a winger, a striker? Like, he's where are they intending to play him? So they're still not solving the main problem. That's a weird one for me. I don't get it.
I think
the Aubameyang one makes sense.
They're also signing a lot of youngsters, so they're going for that ones for the future as well.
Well, fair, they do have an old squad, especially in their center backs. So I sort of get that. At the same time, though, it's a balance between planning for now and planning for the future. Planning for now, they need a striker. Chasing Aubameyang makes sense for me, especially since he's worked with Tuchel. Both of them understand the expectations of each other. On the other hand, planning for the future is like, do you want to spend that money on Anthony Gordon when he's not probably going to get the game time? Is he going to bench Sterling? Is he going to bench Mount? Are they going to tweak the formation to accommodate him? If I'm Anthony Gordon, those are the questions I'm asking myself, right? Because at least I know from where I am in Everton. Everton is obviously nowhere near Chelsea's level at the moment, but I am guaranteed the game time that is sure to help my development.
Also, he can be sold for cheaper next season once Everton get relegated.
Fair, exactly. So we'll see, man. We'll see. I don't know. Shout out to Iwobi. He's looked good at the central midfielder so far this season.
Yeah, I'm really worried for Everton. I'm not gonna lie. The fact that Iwobi is their central midfielder, but they just signed the guy Onana for big money. From the Ligue 1, French youngster, one of those French young midfield beasts that they just keep churning out in France. So let's see how he does. Should we spend 2 minutes on the title race, Liverpool, City, and their two new strikers?
Let me start with the lad, Erling Haaland. So I think it's in the first two games, the biggest thing I've seen is Haaland himself is made for the Premier League. There's nothing anybody can tell me. The lad is going to be...
May I suggest something somebody could potentially say?
What?
8 touches in the last game. Second lowest in Prem history.
So, fair. Which is fair.
It doesn't matter. Nah,
exactly. I don't think it matters. But
one of them was an assist.
That brings me to my second point. Although Haaland is made for the Premier League, his team still needs to adapt to him a bit. Right? I feel like for the last, you could say, 2.5 seasons, for the most part, City are so used to playing without a striker, but now they have like a serial goal scorer. So there will be an adapting period, right? Where it would have stats like, 8 touches in a game, although one of those touches is an assist. But we would have ones like the one against West Ham where De Bruyne threw on goal, proper finish, looking like Henry with his left foot. For the second goal, it is, I believe.
Yeah, De Bruyne was disgusting with one of the finishes, though. Like,
so exactly. So
he started the season on
form. That guy's a beast. I'm sorry, but like, it reminded sidetracked all that, but it just reminded me that De Bruyne is truly a fucking beast. Like, nobody does that. Nobody has that level of control and power of the ball. Guy, this guy just does what he pleases. Like, he was just like, I'm just going to pass the ball in there. And that's how we ended last season, which is why City are obviously winning the league, but carry on.
But so I think Haaland looks good with what we've seen so far. He's had some like screamers, but hearing the lads talk, you can also tell like he thinks about his performances. He knows what he needs to work on. And Guardiola, you're hearing him talk about Haaland, you can tell he also knows the team has work to do to feed into Haaland's strengths, so that Haaland feeding into the team's strengths too. For example, there was a chance they had where Foden could have squared to him,
tapping,
and Foden decided to shoot. Why he did that?
Conclusion for me is that Erling Haaland is going to bank fucking goals this season. Like,
I have a target of like 35 goals in all competitions. Ooh.
Ambitious.
Okay, all competitions.
Okay. Yeah, 35, okay. 35 in all competitions.
Before we enter Liverpool, actually no, give them Liverpool, give them Nunes, and I have one to
turn. So let me cut in with Nunes. I feel like Nunes is going to be a very interesting player because like I watched his game today, yeah, and I think it's clear that he is like physically he's top. He's very rapid. And he can, it's like he can sniff out goals or something like that. He has a very good eye for goals, but his technique is lacking, honestly. His technique is, I don't want to say it's appalling, but I just feel like it's not good enough. But funny enough, I think he's still going to be a success in Prem because he just seems to have that, I don't know, gung-ho. He's like, you know, I must score. He has
that rawness in him.
Yeah. As far as desire.
Exactly. And I think he's actually someone like Nunez, yeah. If he played for a team other than Liverpool, maybe he could have played for City. I don't know if Pep would have liked him, but if he played for a team that doesn't create a lot of chances, then he might struggle. Because I feel like he will end up frustrating people. And then over time, like, you know, the feelings towards him will change.
Basically, but he's lucky that he
plays for Liverpool. Because Liverpool are going to actually keep on, like, you know, they're always in the opposition's half, always in the opposition's box. And just based on that, I think he will get a decent number of goals. I don't think he's going to outscore Haaland though, but no I way. Think he will surprise a lot of people.
Do you think, who do you think is going to score more, Nunez or Jesus? Gabi Jesus?
In the Premier League?
In the Premier League.
Jesus, easy. It's more from, Jesus. I think Jesus.
I'm going to go with Jesus as well.
Who do you guys have as top scorer?
I have
Haaland.
So let's see. Is this like health being equal or
we should be... who is the top scorer at the end of the season?
Health being equal
all or being like... equal.
Okay. Wishing everyone good health, although in reality, no.
He's really hammering this health piece.
I think he's right too because Haaland has had some fitness, you know. And I think Pep has mentioned that he's gonna manage his fitness, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a valid point.
Yeah, and the league is also more demanding. But not only that, if you think about it, all the, you could say, contenders, except Darwin Nunez, which I don't know much about his health history. So my main contenders right now four are Kane, Jesus, Haaland. And if Nunez can figure out whatever is going on with his life, him too.
Just, I mean, watch out for Luis Diaz. Watch out for Luis Diaz.
Sorry, and I said Salah. I said Nunez.
Nobody's mentioning Salah. Okay.
I meant good. Salah. My bad. I was thinking of a Liverpool player. I don't know why. Maybe because we're talking about Nunez, but I meant Salah. Nunez. So Salah, Kane, Jesus, Haaland. Those are my like candidates.
Yeah, the usual suspects.
For this. Thing. But all of them, barring Salah, have some form of like injury thing. Jesus had a bit of it at City. Other than the fact Guardiola wasn't playing him consistently. Kane usually has his one that he'll be out for 2 months in the season. Then he'll come back. Haaland has had niggles, especially in this his last season at Dortmund, and it's a more demanding league. So that's why I'm like, that health key is very key. Now,
it might end up being Salah in the ending, man.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's the most consistent with health and just he's used to the system and stuff. That being said, I really like Jesus for it in that Arsenal looks like a team that's creating a lot of chances. And not only that, Jesus is like, he's a nuisance in every phase of the game. Like,
you know what the thing is, yeah?
Yeah, like...
I feel like it will be Jesus. Honestly, I wasn't, like, I know he's going to be good for us, but I wasn't really, like, backing him to be close to the, like, a top goal scorer. But also, like, I've noticed that he's the kind of player that loves to pop up in one game. Like he can all of a sudden just pop like four. He's done that for City a couple of times. And look at what he did. Yesterday, he could have easily scored four, you know. And I think that's actually going to help him a lot because he can just, now he's going to get a lot of minutes for Arsenal. And if any team decides to be loose, best believe he's going to put like three past three if he can.
My one of my wild predictions for this season is that Arsenal is going to hammer someone. Like hammer. I'm talking like seven. Before like the campaign is over, we're gonna have one of those performances where you just
that would be nice, man.
Turn someone over, but yeah, if I too, you were quiet on this top scorer appeal. Who do you have? And then after that, tell us your order for top four, and also where you see United finishing for bands.
I agree with Damola that Haaland is made for the Premier League, and I think Haaland is going to be the top scorer at the end of the season. With regards to my top four, Let's see. I mean, from what I've seen so far in terms of like, you know, the first week of Premier League and then the transfer business so far, I have Manchester City finishing top of the league.
I don't say Arsenal, man. Ahead of Liverpool.
Liverpool are moving moist. I think Liverpool are struggling with consistency in terms of like season to season. You know, I don't know. I don't think they've particularly been consistent in terms of like competing with Manchester City. They will come second this season, and the next season they'll drop off to, I don't know, to whatever, fourth or whatever. I think this is going to be one of those seasons, just based off how they started again. I think Nuno is going to need some time to integrate. So Manchester City, Arsenal, Scrub that. Manchester City, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea.
What?
So you don't have Liverpool in your top four?
I don't have Liverpool in my top four, guys.
Oh my God, Ifatu, my G.
They lost money, guys. They lost money.
You know what?
And money.
Can I do my predictions next?
The Liverpool team.
Yeah, so, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I think I have City as first. To be very honest, I still think the title is going to be between City and Liverpool. So I'm going to give Liverpool second. That's the next bracket is where there's going to be a lot of competition. I think Arsenal, Chelsea, and Spurs. Obviously, I think a lot of people put Spurs, but I'm going to be biased. I'm going to be openly biased and put Arsenal as third. And I don't like Spurs, so Chelsea as fourth.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Christian is not realistic. So,
I just wanted to add that, yeah, I actually kind of I get with why Ifatu doesn't want to put Liverpool so high, because I think a lot of people are not realizing what Liverpool are going to miss without Mane. I think they're going to, like, it's a huge loss. But I still think Klopp has the answers. I think
the midfield is looking a bit scanty as well. I was looking today.
I think because Thiago is injured, yeah?
Yeah.
And Henderson as well.
Yeah, and where's Ox now? Isn't he gone? Scratch anyway.
No, Ox is injured. So Henderson is actually fit. Henderson played today. But Liverpool's midfield is light. And unfortunately, the key players appear to be injury prone. So Liverpool played who today? They played Elliot, Fabinho, and Milner.
I was like, lol.
Like, that's it. I think in an ideal world, Klopp wants to play Fabinho, Thiago sitting. And when he has his strikers, he can then put Jota behind them, Nunez up front, Salah on the right.
I think he plays Javier Elliott and then sticks to three.
But I think it varies by team, by formation, what he's trying to do and things like that. But he wants that flexibility. Unfortunately, injury hasn't been kind to his team to necessarily do that at the start of the season, which is why, for me, I'm actually surprised they haven't been going to try to sign a proper midfielder in there. If not for anything, also for load balancing, man. Because once the game starts coming in, it's a World Cup year. You're going to need these guys to take rest, even if they don't want it. So that's been a slightly surprising one from Liverpool.
Give us your prediction, top four.
My prediction, City first, Liverpool second, Arsenal third, Chelsea fourth.
Wow. This has all been really interesting. Ifatu's prediction, I think, is obviously one to watch. He had City, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, I believe.
Arsenal, Chelsea.
That's one to watch. For me, I think it's clear cut this season. The story is written. Manchester City first, Liverpool second. I think Liverpool just lost the league in the first two games. Like, what are they doing? then after them, Antonio Conte and Spurs, and then Chelsea. I think Chelsea and Spurs are interchangeable. And then Arsenal, obviously, just behind them. I just think those squads are much deeper than the Arsenal squad. And even though the Arsenal first 11 might be putting in some electric performances right now, if we have any setbacks, those guys, they're deeper.
So you don't think we're going to be able to make top four this season?
I hope we will make the top four. But when I calculate, just like I calculated last season, it was not adding up. And it's just not adding up again this season. Chelsea are just simply too strong. They'll beat most Premier League teams, turmoil or not. And I just believe in a second season Conte, even more than I believe in a first season Conte. Then the wheels should fall off after the season. But I think Tottenham, especially with the recruitments that they've made, they're issuing. But I hope Arsenal surprises everybody. Me, in my heart, like what I told my flatmate actually was that we can compete for the title, but I won't say that officially on the podcast.
You just said it, bro.
One game at a time, bro. One game at a time, and that's how you do it. I'm telling you.
I will say this, though. Arsenal has the better fixtures in the first maybe six games of the season than any other person I see fighting for the top four. I consider City fighting for the title, so I'm not even counting them as part of the fixtures Arsenal has. But like people fighting for top four, top three, Arsenal has Crystal Palace, Leicester, which we beat. Then we have Bournemouth, Fulham, Aston Villa before we play United on the 4th of September. I think those are very winnable matches versus we're not even going to look at
even United. The United game is winnable now. How far?
But that's what I'm saying. Versus like if you look at Tottenham. So Tottenham has had Chelsea, which was a draw. Then they have City in the next five games, I believe. Yeah, so they have then. So Tottenham's run is actually not as bad as I thought. So they have Wolves next. They have Nottingham Forest. Then they have West Ham, Fulham, City, Leicester, Arsenal. So
yeah, I think sorry, go on.
Yeah, so that's going to be the tricky one for them. But like generally, I feel like Arsenal has like the better route compared to the people in the top four.
I hear what you're saying, to be honest, but I think it's definitely too early to be looking at the games, man. As in Liverpool would have looked at their first two fixtures and said Fulham away, Crystal Palace at home, 6 points. Here we go.
I get that.
Also, just because you have a bigger game, like last, we all play the same people, Sha, is basically what I'm reminding you of.
You know what I think is going to be a factor that will weigh in Arsenal's favor? I think the fact that Arsenal are playing Europa League and not Champions League is actually going to be an advantage at the start. Because at the start in the group stage, we're going to be able to roll out our second team,
bro,
for that for them Thursday night games. Whereas Spurs and Chelsea are going to be playing full team Wednesday and Saturday.
Exactly.
I think that's actually going to go in our favor.
Yep, and that's very true. Because again, a lot of times, right? Like obviously, at the end of the season, wherever you are, you deserve to be, right? But these like mini runs that teams can go on are very key. This period where Spurs will have to play us, have to play City, have to play Leicester, they have maybe one or two Champions League games sandwiched in between there. Who is Conte going to bench? He's not going to bench Kane. He's probably not going to bench Son. So that's like a forced rotation for him. As per how do I balance this thing? Versus us, we know for a fact that it won't be pretty, but the entire second team can play and get us past those group stages.
Okay. Really good points, actually. I like that you brought that up. But I'm also conscious that we need to move on to other leagues, spend at least 10 minutes last 10 minutes of our pod looking at all the farmers.
No. Winemakers, paella makers.
And the team that are pulling all sorts of levers and things.
Let's go straight into La Liga. Obviously, it's going to be Barcelona versus Real Madrid again this season.
Let's not write off Atletico.
No, Atletico are not in this. Not in this in-between state of not knowing what they are anymore. Especially after last season. I don't see Atletico being in the race. But I mean, you can argue for them if you know something I don't. I'm more keen to get into that Barcelona versus Madrid, because when I look on paper with the recruitment that they have done, with the levers that they have pulled, surely it's Barcelona's title. Like, am I the only one that sees that?
I disagree.
How did their first game go?
Exactly.
I'm not too sure. What happened?
They drew.
It was 0-0. And I think
they drew versus
at the ending.
Rayo Vallecano. So.
Exactly. Yep,
they couldn't score. They couldn't score, man, which is a shame. After signing Lewandowski, Rafinha, like, come on.
So, and that's the bit for me. That's been like my biggest thing about Barcelona's transfer window. On paper, just like the signings they made, it looks good. But if there's anything we've learned about making prolific signings, if you don't fix the balance of your PSG. Team properly, PSG, exactly. Cough, cough. Director of football Mbappe having issues. Cough, cough. But like there's still a balance Barcelona needs to address. Because for example, I understand they may be looking towards youth, but I, for example, think they spent too much on forwards. Right. Lewandowski is one of those talents you're like, oh yeah, if I have a chance, I get him. But the chase for Rafinha, when you still have Ansu Fati, Oba, who can play either at the center, off the wing, you still have Dembele.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I didn't get the need for Rafinha.
I agree with you, man. They didn't need him, but I'm still glad they signed him, man. Because if Chelsea had signed him, it would have been peak for us.
Oh yeah, it would have been a problem.
I would have loved for Arsenal to sign him.
I would have loved for Arsenal to sign him too. But
back to Liga.
It's, I don't know. There's a thing about like they made good signings, individual signings, but I still think they have a bit of a balance problem. And going later into the season when everybody is wanting to play, how will Xavi handle that? That's going to be a big question because Xavi hasn't really won anything yet as a coach. As a player, he has, and hopefully that may be enough to get them through when he has to tell certain players, yeah, you're not playing for whatever reason. But someone like Guardiola, the reason he could afford to bench Jesus, Bernardo Silva, Sterling at those different points in the season was he's a serial winner as a coach. So when he's telling them, it's like, well, I can't argue against your winning record. With Xavi, you're like, hey, you're still a rookie manager. And what have you won as a manager? I can argue against that. So I'll be very interested to see how that plays towards the end of the season. But yeah, I can't look past Madrid. I think they addressed more of their balance issues. They got a reinforcement in center back, which was a big one. And they freed up Alaba to play wherever he's needed, either as a center back or the left back. And they also showed up the midfield, Tchouaméni. I think we see more of Camavinga this season. I'm hoping to see a rejuvenated Hazard. So the only thing they probably need is a good backup center forward. But market is scarce for that one. So I'm leaning Madrid's way. Also, shout out to Big Ben for the Ballon d'Or.
Big Ben. Oh,
Ben Madrid's way too. He was nominated. I mean, so who do you think is going to win it? Let's just use this now to jump into that.
I don't think there's any clear. Maybe under than that one that Lewandowski should have won, that didn't happen. I don't think there's any clearer winner for all the awards this season than Benzema, in my opinion.
Maybe that's why Lewandowski went to La Liga to square up with the guy.
Hey, bro, if Barca don't get close to Champions League, he shouldn't even think about it. I mean, based on the way previous Ballon d'Or winners have been selected and whatnot, I think I'll be surprised if it doesn't go to Benzema.
To circle back to La Liga quickly, I agree with Damola. All my yarns about Barcelona is just speculative. I think Real Madrid have the experience, they have the nous, they have the know-how, they have the quality. And it's just going to take Xavi too long, I think, to put these pieces together. And I also think the stuff away from football actually affects the player. It doesn't let you settle as quickly as you could. And I'm pretty sure Ifatu agrees. What else do we have to talk about?
Agrees.
Okay, wait. Before we go, women's Euros.
Shout out to England, the England team to finally do it. Are the women's team also called the Three Lions? I should know this, but I'm not sure.
The Lionesses.
Shout out to the proper Three Lionesses. that actually did it. Not those useless three lions that have been trying since God knows how long.
Shout out to Beth Mead.
And actually, in real life, the female lion is the one that actually does all the work and the hunting.
Exactly.
That's true. That's stuff. True.
Exactly.
It holds true.
Life imitating football. But no, shout out to the Lionesses. They had a fantastic tournament. Shout out to my Arsenal striker, Beth Mead. She was magnificent throughout the tournament. And yeah,
Leah Williamson as well.
Shout out to Leah Williamson.
Captain Arsenal, great.
Captain extraordinaire.
Man, and, these Arsenal guys.
So it's not our fault our team is doing well, bro. You can't blame us. It's not our fault.
But Manchester United
were Alicia Russo. Yes, Alicia Russo was one of the top scorers. Ella Toon scored in the final, for goodness sake.
And Ella Toon's goal was beautiful, man. I'll give it to her. Exactly. It was a beautiful goal.
Such a great goal to score in such a big occasion as well. Those guys lived up to the hype, man. It was a beautiful journey. And you can tell it's doing...
And also the goalkeeper. Football. The goalkeeper was from Manchester United as well.
Manchester United team.
Take the little joys. And also, thank you to Ifatu for this one. But a quick note on the Nigerians women under 20 team, who are in the quarterfinals of the World Cup and are smashing it beyond expectations. Following this more closely, do you have any word to say on it?
Yeah, I mean, of recent, I don't know. There's just been this crazy wave of talented young Nigerian women, and I mean, based off what's been happening in the Commonwealth Games, I felt like the expectations were a bit high for them, and they haven't even remotely disappointed. These people beat France, totally unexpected, and then beat South Korea as well for good measure. Just let everyone know that we're here to win it. The talented Nigerian scorer Flourish, who is scoring left, right, center everywhere. I know a lot of clubs are going to be looking at her. It's a good tournament. It's going well. I'm happy that Nigeria are representing for once.
I think Ifatu said, we've had a wave of Nigerian women in sports being fantastic. Side note, shout out to Toby Amuso, Toby Rockets. We salute you. Shout out to our long jumper. Is her name Izzy or Ade? I'm also forgetting her name, but we had a good athletics run. And the under 20, I pray the women do well and they get paths towards the big league. So whether it's the WSL, who knows, man, maybe one of them can play for Arsenal. Let my Niger Arsenal fandom even take an extra.
Bring back that Kanu vibe.
Kelechi Wankali disappointed us in that regard.
Also, let me just add Asisat Oshoala, who was nominated for the Ballon d'Or.
Yes, that's another big one. Asisat. Yep. When I saw that, I was so excited because she won Barcelona Feminine's Best Player of the Year.
Yes.
She was their highest goal scorer. Unfortunately, they couldn't win the Champions League again this season. That was a bit too much for them. Lyon beat them. But she had a phenomenal season. And being the first African-Nigerian woman to be nominated for the Ballon d'Or, I think, is a big win. I hope she wins it, even though Barcelona didn't win the Champions League. And yeah, hopefully we'll celebrate more.
The girl that won it last year is a Lyon player, and she scored in the final.
Yeah, that's true. But this one, I think it's the... What's her name? She plays for Norway. She took a break from football for a bit.
Ada Hegerberg.
Exactly. And she won the Champions League with Lyon this past season. So, given the way Ballon d'Or behaves, there's a chance it will lean towards her. But I think Asisat has a good shout out because of how just dominant Barcelona in general.
Well, guys, I think that's a beautiful note to end on. Shout out to Nigerian women in general. We love you.
Yeah, man. They are the best.
Christian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Christian.
We're back. And every 2 weeks, we'll be dropping an episode on Failingly, Consistency Kings.
Yes. Also, if there's something you want to hear on the podcast, whether it's about women's football, if you feel like we don't cover the winemakers leagues well enough, or if you want to hear who we think, for example, is going to be relegated, My money's on Nottingham Forest and Fulham.
Don't worry, we'll get into that one next
time. Sure. But generally, like, reach out to us on Instagram 3 in a row, and we will see how we can integrate your ideas into
please.
The podcast.
We would love to hear from you. Give us some interaction, guys, please.
Thank you. And yeah. Okay. Peace. That's been it from us. Thank you, guys.